Hey, I'm Harry, one of the most famous gingers in esports. And you're watching Thorin's YouTube channel, home of the most famous ginger in esports.
Right, this is going to be another episode of Esports Salon, which is actually an old industry talk show I had that I like necroed back to life and just decided to do it again. I always joke that we do actually have an industry talk show called The Four Horsemen that I do with Richard Lewis and Monte Cristo on The Last Three Nation. But the problem is, let's just say I would never be as indelicate as to say who was having scheduling problems, but it wasn't me. So you figure out which of the other two doesn't schedule the show often enough for me to do all the shows I'd like to do on there again. Right, but answers on a postcard, if that's still a thing. Okay, this episode, the theme is going to be, oh, don't worry. You know how people hate how, like, both esports journalists and talent, every interview is just about them, and it's all, like, mad self-indulgent as if we all do the most important and hard job in the world. It's going to be one of those with no shame attached to it whatsoever. So are you ready? I'll set it up to really irritate all the fans. You know how you have to go, wake up in the morning, get on that bus at 7:30, you get to Tesco, the guy tells you which aisle you're going to stack all the beans on, you're thinking about tonight's games and all the CS, and the skin that you might win if you open that case, but you probably won't, because you never got that knife that Kev did you? You just get the fucking bison skin still. When you're doing all that, you probably don't even have the grace and the wherewithal to share a thought for those of us attending esports events, working as famous on-camera people and being paid your monthly income each day. Because believe it or not, it's not all just glamour and being on camera and getting all that sick money. That's way more than you'll ever have. It's actually sometimes can be annoying. Like, you can be tired. Food situation isn't always ideal. Sometimes you have to work a game that isn't your favorite team that you're watching. You know, when I say all this, all of a sudden, guys, the episode sounds ridiculous, but I'm being serious. There actually is a lot behind the scenes people wouldn't know. And it isn't actually as much of a sort of, you're just on camera talking games and having a laugh, lol. Like, there's a lot more actually goes into it. So to be more serious, I've got a little round table panel of people here who all work as talent. And the joke is, I used to work as talent. Well, here's the thing, not everyone in this screen always gets hired anyway, but they in theory work as talent. They all really do. I don't at all, but I pretend like I used to. So in the top right-hand corner, we have got Veracity, who, if you're a CS fan, you probably saw doing the Elisa Masters Espo event last year and a bunch of other events going back. In fact, she even did like a major a few years back, right? Didn't you do like one day on a major or something?
Yeah,
or a couple?
Yeah. Did the Rio major. That
there you go. Yes. Yeah. Listen, James back. You're back. It's all good. We can all come back to see us. And obviously does a bunch of other games. If you ever see, she is in like that UK esports scene where every other day on the socials, she's in like some studio. It looks like one of those Gfinity TV studios. It's like, I'm doing eFootball and I don't know, fucking, it's all, you do the full gamut, right? You do all that shit,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, do a little bit of everything. I just got back from doing the FIFA event, which was pretty sick. That was Rocket League and eFootball. But I just love it. I love working in different games. Pretty fun.
Yeah. And then we've got the CS nerds down there. So in the bottom right-hand corner, we have got Yumi, who did actually just do the height of his career. He did a watch party with me for the Blast Valley final the other day. And I tell you what.
I peaked already.
Yeah, listen. When you work with the best, it's hard to go back to the rest. So obviously he works as a commentator. He actually does loads of like tier two and online stuff. If you don't know, he's in the mix doing all that with the usual cadre. And then we've got Hawker, who, listen, I always phrase it this way. In theory, he does commentary, he can do analysis. He can actually do it all, just YouTube, he even does those like Mark Goldbridge style fast reaction things. I always joke this way because I'm both a very honest person and a little bit mean, which is, I always said to Hawker, like, you should drop that fucking Dinko guy, mate. You're way better than him. Well, you know what? In a way, that worked out in the end, but did it is the problem. I always thought you were the better one personally, you know. Maybe Moses just didn't get along as well with you. I don't know what the rules are, Hawker. But anyway, what are you at the moment, by the way? Do you consider yourself analyst? Do you commentate? Which would be your preferred role?
Oh, that's tough. I think I want to try analyst stuff, but then also, like, you look at the events and you're like, oh, there's like two analysts.
Yeah,
or something.
True.
So you're like, well,
true.
It seems like that's kind of not a thing. So
that's true.
Who knows? I'll take whatever. I'll take whatever.
Yeah. Anyway, that is a fitting industry fucking line that everyone would say at this point in time. Okay, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to make this more of a round table. People are just going to jump in and out. I thought the first place we could go in, because this is more of a serious one before we get to the, like, fun ones with all the stories, is people might not realize when you work an event and you go on location and you have the whole studio up for the day and they've booked in whatever, two best of threes or four, but whatever it might be, obviously scheduling is a big issue if you're a talent. Like, which games do you get put on? Do you get put on the early games? Do you put on the late game? Now, one thing I'll actually start the conversation by saying is people would probably be shocked. And even though I don't work the current events, I'm well aware of this because I have to actually liaise with people who do work those events to find out when I can do talk shows with them. And I can tell you one thing that will be very shocking to people who are in the public is how many of those events to this day, you don't know which shifts you're on or what matches you're doing. Even if all the matches in like the group stage are laid out until the night before, like literally it might be like 11 p.m. local time, you find out, and your first match might even be like you have to be up at like 8 or 9 in the morning, you have to be at the stage. Like, has this been a general experience of other people? Is the scheduling still a bit wacky and a little bit last minute? What's it like?
Yeah, I was going to say, to be fair to Jazz, she's host, so she's normally just doing everything.
That's true.
Literally perma okay. On camera. First one's in, last one's out. But for the boys as well, like, I think it's the same for everyone. We find out literally the night before. I've had many instances as well, where we need to find out what time we're in for rehearsals, and they still haven't decided when our rehearsal day is, if there even is a rehearsal day. We've had so many times where rehearsal days have been cut completely, and then to compensate for that, you're in super early in the morning to try and do a rehearsal before the show goes live as well, which obviously doesn't give you much time to fix stuff.
Yeah, and I think what I've found is that even if you know when you're going to be working, it is primarily like you don't know what you're going to be working. And if you're an analyst and you want to prep the specific matchup, or you want to create a narrative that's far more tailored to that game, it does, you know, take some time out of your evening or in the mornings if you're going to be in early enough for that. But I think the thing that people don't appreciate, that even regardless of scheduling, like, oh, what? So you have to wake up early and you have to commentate games. But you also have to, even if you're on the late shift, you have to watch everything in the mornings as well. You have to be aware of what's happening outside of just your purview within the tournament, just because later down the line, if there's a narrative that other analysts have been using and you're not aware of it, then you're going to present this point as if you're the one that's, you know, come up with the idea, even though somebody else, one of your colleagues, has said the exact same thing earlier on. So there has to be a level of coherency and continuity within the broadcast that only really happens where you either talk to each other or you're constantly watching each other in what you do.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's weird sometimes, because I think it also comes back to something that when you're at events, it's very self-directed. Like, there's one person who's your talent manager, and then there's sort of like a vague idea that you sit there and you sort of know there are people like making decisions and who are either maybe happy with you or not, but you never really talk to them. Oftentimes the scheduling person, you never really talk to, you just kind of look at
them. They just give you the schedule, the send you an email.
Yeah.
Or WhatsApp
and then,
or whatever.
Like, occasionally, sometimes you will talk to your like fellow analyst and you'll be like, maybe it makes more sense for us actually to switch. And sometimes you can sort of switch, but it's always like quite dependent on the organizer. So yeah, it is weird. I think, like Yumi said, the main one is not being able to know ahead of time and not being able to prep is quite a big deal. I assume for you, Thorin, it's more chill because you can just show up and make jokes, which is a little easier. But if you are trying to like, you know, be the more in-depth analyst, depending on which role you have, like sitting there and being like, cool, I can't really prep, is like, all right, it's not ideal, but hey, you do what you can.
Jumping on that like sort of self-directing thing, you know, there are times where, you know, other broadcast talent are saying things, or maybe they don't even notice something that happens on a broadcast. I know this has happened to me directly, where like a veto came up and we do our own prep, we have our own points, and they don't bring up anything to do with the veto.
Now,
the veto is very specific. Like, the veto was different because I think so in this instance, it was Simple was standing in for a team, and he doesn't play certain maps, or he hasn't played certain maps within his career, and so the veto changed to reflect that, and the analyst didn't bring that up at all. And so when it cut to us on commentary, we bring up that point, but we make it a bit of a bit, you know, the fact that Simple has usurped the veto or the map pool or whatever. And, you know, this is all water under the bridge now because, I mean, it's been some time since past. But, you know, after the fact, you have received messages from product managers or whatever being like, oh, well, you know, you made a bit of a joke about it, but we're not sure that you should have taken that route with it or whatever. And it's like, we did it in that way just to sort of bounce off of the absence of the point on the desk so that it sort of compensates it. And you know, I have no ill will to people that are far less prep heavy or see the veto as less important or whatever. You know, there people are going to prioritize different things on a broadcast, but I also think that, you know, if there isn't a hands-on, you know, direct scripting and storyboarding ahead of time, if you're not going to go through all that process, that I know Riot and, you know, a lot of franchise leagues often do. Yeah. You know, they want to sit down with the statisticians and the narrative builders far ahead of time. If you're not going to bother to do that, then I also don't think you have the ability to then superimpose post-mortem at something that has happened, unless it's super outrageous. You know, if you're going after people publicly or personally or whatever, I think there's obviously a line that you have to hold as a professional, but it can be a bit awkward self-directing yourself in that way if you're not going to go through those steps beforehand.
I mean, bro, the fact that you even get that feedback, that's more than we usually get.
That is true. Yeah,
I've done so many events where after the fact, I will go to my producer and I'll reach out to my talent manager and be like, who's the person that I get feedback from? And it's always the same line of, if we have any feedback, we'll let you know. So, like, I don't know if it's, like, unheard of to really get feedback. Okay. I don't think I've done a single event.
They're also too intimidated to give you feedback. Obviously, they don't feel like they can approach you.
I'm not that scary, bro.
true. I will say, the joke is, I actually ironically do have that effect consciously, which is, way back in the day, like 10 years ago, there was a DreamHack producer who naively went to Richard Lewis, because Richard Lewis was the desk host, and was like, you have to control Thorin. And he was like, what the fuck do you want me to do, mate? Like, well, yeah, I don't know what he's about to say to us. So I like the effect where they don't come and say anything to you unless it's literally like, yeah, the sponsor would like you to stop talking about that, please. There you go. What? Even then you go, bloody hell, all right, I guess we can't have any fun around here, can we? Anyway, the thing is, Hawker, you say that, like, I just turn up and crack jokes. You don't know how many hours I'm prepping. I have to figure out, like, a euphemism for why that player's ugly. I have to relate it to Proust or Shakespeare or something. There's talent there, mate. Listen, if you see a lot of broadcasts now...
Ways. That's all,
I see what you mean. I will also say, by the way, a more serious point. I'll tell you how you know someone's too green doing like analysis or casting, for example. They look at the schedule and they go, brilliant, I've got the second game, I can have a lie in. It's like, oh, my sweet summer child, you are now a prisoner to the first game that you aren't working, because the second map one ends, and by the way, we're in MR12 now, boys, that could be like 20 minutes. The second map one ends, if you're like waiting for food to arrive in a cafe, or you're not at the venue and you have to take a shuttle, you have to get ready already. And even better, when you're watching map two, and you know that when map two wins, you're going to be on in like half an hour. If that map two goes OT and then the team that lost map one wins, congrats, you just added another hour to your... That's actually a prisoner. And also, remember, teams don't play an equal length time either. So the first game could be Falcons. They might 2-0 the game 13-3 both times. Or it could be Jame and he might be on his fucking paid by the round bullshit where it could last 3.5 hours with every timeout used and every... So people don't realise that one. It sounds on paper like I'd rather have a lie in and all that. I actually think low-key, the base story is to do the first game, and then afterwards you can choose to dip in and out like Yumi says to watch the match, but you don't have like a time pressure on yourself, because it's actually the uncertainty in a weird way that makes it like frustrating, because sometimes you will have like 3 hours off, it's awesome, sometimes you'll have an hour and a half, but you can never actually really know until halfway into that which it is.
But also, that's even not if you're on the second game, you're still getting the shuttle with the team that are on the first game, because you need to get into hair and makeup as well. And they want to do mic checks and everything the day off too. So you don't really get a line. You're just waiting around in the green room until first series finishes.
I was actually going to bring that up, is that especially for you, Jazz, or often a lot of the female broadcast talent, when they go into hair and makeup, that takes a lot longer than most, than the male counterparts, for example, you know, for a lot of the men don't want a lot of makeup on at all, really. So it's just kind of like powder me up and touch up my eyebrows or whatever and leave me alone. But it's usually a bit of a, and I've seen this before, but it's been a bit more of a project for the women that are far more creative with their hair or their makeup and all this other stuff, right? So even if you think you're going to get a bit of a lie-in, you're maybe getting an extra 20-30 minutes maximum, and then you're either on the next shuttle or you're, like you said, you're with the first team out anyway.
it definitely can be different. As a caster, though, if you know you're not on camera, that is... I had days where my job was come in, do one best of three, you know you're not on camera, and literally you'd get a quick 2-0 and you'd be sitting there like... I understand why the casters love it, because you worked about 2 hours and you were like, cool, okay.
It's well, like
that's,
Riley.
That's a ridiculously easy day. Like, the days where you have one best of three as a caster were just like a joke. You would just sit there like, cool. I mean, it was also genuinely sick, because I would spend the morning actually prepping the game like really in depth. Like, I would look at like previous matchups. I would feel like I knew exactly what was going to happen. Like, I could read the game so well. In an ideal world, that would be incredible. But obviously, like, there are limitations. You can't expect that all the time. But the days where I would just have one game in a day, like, oh, the amount in depth you could go is just like, it's so good. It's just, you just feel so good.
I can confirm, if you are a man, the ideal is they just put like the lightest amount of foundation so your head doesn't gleam like mine is right now. It's got that like fucking thing when the beginner artist is drawing an apple. It's got that thing to show he knows how to do light. And you want that taken off so you just look normal, you know, but you don't want anything too crazy. Because I will say, I did once do an event in China, like, I think it was like a Star Series, where the whole people doing hair and makeup were Chinese and they didn't speak any English. So you just had to sit there and they just did whatever they wanted. And they not only put forked up, they did that thing where like, it was like I was in a makeup tutorial. They made my whole face like foundation, then used that as a can. They were drawn in like eyebrow, mad. And then at the end, this is the maddest part, they pulled out some like curling tongs or something. I was thinking, who's that for? And they start just doing my hair, like doing it all, like going. And it was, and it had so much product and it was crazy. At the end, I felt like, who even am I? What is this? This is fucking mental.
It wouldn't be surprised if I saw your portrait on like the side of a Qing dynasty temple then at that point, you know?
Exactly.
They're making you that way.
And also, I'll give you an example of where actually, as men, we are quite naive. I had to learn the hard way when I did E-League. I won't say who the female host was on that, like the interviewer, but I would do that naive thing where when we would have to get up really early in the morning, because we used to have like production meetings, because TV at like 7 in the morning. So we'd be there at like 8:30 or something. When we'd be in the green room before anyone's done anything, you haven't got dressed enough. The amount of times I would say, like, oh, you have a bad night's sleep, did you? She'd be going, no, I just haven't had my makeup. I just haven't had my makeup done yet, because I would like see like the dark hat circles. Like, fucking hell, bloody hell, you must have been out all night. What have you been? I just didn't know. I didn't know the Wizard of Oz magic that goes on there, boys. I had no clue. I've learned now though.
Yeah, I mean, just on like cultures and makeup and stuff as well. Like, the first LAN I ever did was in Lithuania, of all places, and the makeup artist that I was working with there was like, I don't have your skin tone, but I'll try my best.
Classic.
And I looked at photos and I looked at the video afterwards, because I put my trust in them. I was naive.
Okay,
this was my
come
first
on.
Event. I looked afterwards. I'm like dark orange on.
Oh,
on these
you were like full Donald Trump.
Fully.
Okay.
And I'm stood next to like the whitest Lithuanian guy ever. So like the contrast is also significant. And so ever since that, it's like I'm far more specific. I try and either translate things ahead of time and write it down so that they know, or I just say nothing. Like,
sure.
please just don't put stuff on. I'll anti-shine myself. I'll try and find a way.
I feel like that's how you can tell when someone is also fresh, because I've gotten into the habit of doing my own makeup now. I'll let them like sort my hair out, but like I don't understand why the process of them doing my makeup can take so much longer than me just doing my own. But when we went to China.
Yeah,
I'm sure you can
imagine.
Oh my God, Yumi. Okay. I walked into the green room and I've burst out crying. I was in the makeup chair for ages, way too long. I said to them, I've brought my own foundation. I can do my own makeup. And they were very insistent that no, our makeup artist wants to do your makeup. And I was like, okay, if they can't match my skin tone, here is a bottle of my foundation. I already know it works. And then obviously they didn't speak any English. So that was a whole ordeal of itself, because they were taking so long. I've walked into the green room, seen myself in the mirror. They put me in full on white face.
Okay.
Full on white face. And oh my God, I burst out crying. Yeah. The boys are trying to calm me down. They're telling me, don't worry, we've got time. Yes. You've got your foundation. You can fix it. And I'm like fuming at this point, because it was like, you literally could have used my own foundation.
Sure.
You chose not to. And their response was, don't worry, we can fix it. We will paint your chest white as well.
Fucking hell, okay.
Okay,
that is a solution in a way, but you know.
Honestly, and we're supposed to go on broadcast in like 20 minutes. I'm like, you just told me you're going to fix my skin tone. Like, I don't know. It was a wild experience. And ever since then, I'm like, I'm good. I will do my own makeup and we'll take it from there.
Yeah. Because that's what people will know about sort of East Asian countries, is that, you know, what is seen as most beautiful is actually like a lot of like the more pale you are, the less tanned you are.
But it's not exaggeration. If you ever see those K-pop models, they've actually done like the skin bleaching and stuff, mate. Like they don't naturally look like that. No.
And it's partially because of like historical norms. You know, if you were outside working in the field,
yes, that's the reason.
Or in construction, you were often
you're considered like a peasant if you've worked in the field and the sun was on you, is the idea or something.
So
you
seem more elegant if you're a little bit lighter toned, right? That's why.
Okay.
Yeah. Whereas like in the UK, I guess if you can afford to go on holiday,
of course,
and get
we have the opposite.
That's like the other. Yeah. That's the signal of wealth, which is kind of interesting.
The grass is always greener, isn't it? So
indeed. Yeah. The thing with the makeup stuff is just fully like, I always feel kind of bad for the makeup artist because I assume they are expecting to do like a day's of work, and then they come in and you slowly do just sort of tell them we don't really need anything. Yeah. And I feel bad because like they clearly want to do work. Like I feel like they spend more time on it because they're like, well, I don't really have much to do. Like, I just need to put a little powder on your face. But I'm like, by the end of the event, half the time, the makeup artist is just kind of sitting there like, cool. Okay. Well, I don't really need to do anything.
Here's the thing, Hawkey. Yeah. You don't have to feel that bad though, because I'll tell you one social dynamic that actually means that they do get to spend half an hour working even on some of the guys, which is the guys that are just like, oh, they think they're chatting her up, but they're just talking about the makeup they're having put on. Like, oh, I prefer sort of a light. So they don't know anything about makeup, mate. They're just trying to talk to a pretty girl who's like, who they have the attention of for 20 minutes and draw it out until, have you worked many events? Like, come on, mate. We're doing the match in about 10 minutes. We get on that fucking chair. There are some people out like that, some shameless individual. We won't name names. You can probably guess in the industry. By the way, one thing they mentioned there, Veracity, is if we're talking about the scheduling, we should also point out, as you say, if you work as the interviewer or the host, there is no, like, you're on the second mat. You just go at the beginning, basically the first possible shuttle. And as you say, basically you leave at the very end as well. And actually, in your particular case, you also have something a bit like the scheduling, though, but it's more like sometimes during the match, in theory, they don't need you. But if at any moment they have that tech pause or they need to go to like a quick mini interview or so, you have to just be ready to just dive into action, right?
Yeah. I've done that so many times. There's been events where, like, I remember there was an event. This was before grand finals. The TO was like, this grand finals has to be immaculate. They'd done all of the testing or whatever. We've gone live, finished the interviews, finished the intros and everything. They get into the first game and there is a massive tech issue. Like, the casters were trying to fill for like 20 minutes and I could tell that they were running out of stuff to talk about. So at this point, I'm like, someone get me my producer. How do I speak to him? The stage managers came over and they were like, what's up? I'm like, someone just send me out there. And they were like, yeah, but we don't know how long it's going to take. I was like, it doesn't matter. We had a crowd for this event as well. And I was like, just send me out there and let me interview people. And this TO was very particular, wanted to like make sure everything was PG, everything went according to plan. And I was like, you're just going to have to trust me at this point, because the casters are running out of things to talk about. They're like talking about silly stuff at this point.
Sure.
You would much rather highlight the fact that the fans are having a great time, like get their thoughts, get them cheering on their favorite team and things like that. And at one point I just got like a, okay, fuck it, go ahead. And then I'm literally like running around the arena with a mic and the poor cameraman, I'm in heels trying to do the rounds, speak to everybody. Yeah. I'm like running from team and like, you know, fans.
And he's carrying some massive camera or something.
He's like having to run backwards and everything.
Oh, brilliant.
I felt so bad for him, but it was like, it was great. Because at the end of it, the people behind it, they were like, thank you so much. Because I'm talking like, we had two PCs that had to be replaced and the players needed to, you know, test the settings and make sure everything was good. So this was like a long film.
Sure.
But I was like literally going upstairs on one side of the arena to the other side. But you just have to be present always, which kind of sucks because it means that you can't actually sit down.
Yeah, you can't settle into the game.
You never know when you're going to be needed next.
Yes. By the way, do you guys as commentators, is it ever actually, here's the thing, people might think because people like me enjoy the fucking factors of fill, it's like podcast mode was always my saying, but is it stressful when you have the fill? Because what people maybe don't know is, it's very rare you actually know how long you need to fill for. Like, sometimes they just say fill, which could be like 2 minutes. Sometimes they'll tell you, like, you got 5 minutes, and then you start talking. After 1 minute, they go, get ready to go back live now. And you're like, I've set a fucking whole point up there. But what do you guys think as casters? Do you like the fill? Is it stressful? Is there a like learning curve? What do you think?
I don't mind it.
I enjoy it to a point. I think there is a natural point that will always occur where you are likely to derail the conversation, because I think it's very easy, in my opinion, to fill talking about the matchup or the teams or whatever, but that's also very monotonous and sometimes a little boring as well the longer you do it, right? So as much as that part's enjoyable in bursts, because as commentators, as analysts, you actually don't get your thoughts out about teams or about matchups, about how the game is going in its entirety. You don't get the space to do that, and a fill actually allows you that room. So it's nice in places. I just always don't know how to toe the seriousness with the let's derail the conversation part. That's a balance I don't think I'm perfect at.
Yeah, I think as a color caster, it's a bit nicer because, you probably have points that you've prepped that you're like, I don't know if this will come up in the game, so right. I'll just say it now. I think the play-by-play is always sitting there kind of like just becoming almost like a weird, awkward host, but they're probably not a host and they don't really have much to say. I do always find it funny, though, like the casters, they will show up the latest and then I guarantee you as soon as there's any sort of tech issue, they'll be like, right, can we throw to someone else, please? I can't be asked to do this. And every time it pays off for them, you know, get the desk back out here. Okay. I can't be asked to fill anymore. They get away with it.
Listen, I didn't want to say it, Hawker, but from the world of the analysts, don't worry, that's what we're all talking about in that green room when actually the casters are just waltzing in for their one game. Oh, but is my drink ready? Oh, yeah, I need to shot back to the hotel immediately after this game. Then also, they're like, oh, can we just throw? Can we just throw immediately so I have to do even less work? Don't get the whole full day of it, though. Yeah, we all think of the casters as the fucking, they're the privileged ones who get all that light. Also, one thing you're getting that, by the way, is Ayumi. When people try to make really long points in actual real casts or desks, not a fill, like that's where all those people who are pros who think they're going to be shit hot on the desk always fuck up at the beginning, mate. They'll start like answering a question like it was a podcast. Like, you know, you've got like 30 seconds, you have to throw to this guy. Like, you can't really make like a 3-minute point where you set it all up and give all history and shit. And then similarly, what you're talking about, I actually think from my time working on different broadcasts, the general rule I like to do is if it's going to be a real fill, it's not going to be 1 minute, it's going to be like 5 to 10. I always usually prefer it if you actually just stop talking about the game. I feel like if you keep circling around the game, you get in a weird holding pattern, which like is awkward for you because also you're like, there's only so much you can say. And then also for the fan, it's like it keeps reminding you like, oh, is this game ever going to fucking start? I sometimes like it on that one. If you know it's a proper fill, you come fully out of it, you talk about something else, and then it's more like when they tell you, right, going back in 1 minute, that's when you bring, and anyway, back to the game, you know, we've got Mirage coming. I feel like it's kind of better to like let some of the pressure out a little bit, you know, don't make it feel like you're just stuck in the moment waiting for it to go live again.
Yeah, I suppose at the start of any fill, I always like to stay on topic because you don't know when it's going to end.
That's true.
If you find out it's another 10 minutes, it's like, okay, that's the green light. We're just doing something else now. Yes. We're talking about life or, you know, even like controversies or drama or whatever. Even questions from Twitch chat. I don't mind. I actually love engaging with like Twitter and Twitch. I don't necessarily always talk or call them out.
But okay, fair enough.
Unnecessary. It's a bit controversial.
There you go, guys. If you're watching the show, he loves engaging with people on Twitter. So if you see his ex, it's on the screen. Send him a message. He'd love to go back and forth for you guys. Yeah.
I have yet to receive any death threats. Okay. But now I've opened up a door. Sure. So.
Yeah, exactly. What about, by the way, also on that topic, there's another thing people don't know about doing like the fills and all that sort of thing. Sometimes people understand a 10-minute fill or 5-minute fill, you're replacing a PC. Sometimes they really will do it where they're like, oh, there's a big problem with this. And then 1 minute later, they do just go back live now. And you're like right in the middle of saying something as well. And sometimes they mean literally like, I'm going to put the game on the screen in 1 second after I say this. Like, you don't even have a time to make like a smooth landing. You have to essentially just like pretend like you knew this was happening. Well, anyway, I think we're going to get right back into the game now. I think we're ready for the pistol. That's what people don't realize. The actual thing I will tell people, I'll give you a quick example, is when I actually did work on E-League in America with American TV, where they had all the teleprompters and they had massive production meetings, like you're saying, we discuss every element. They were legitimately shocked at how good some of the CS talent was for just doing all the stuff on the fly, and that was the default method of how you operate, and that actually usually you don't have a script and a full thing. Like, the joke is, even most of the desks I've ever worked, in theory, the host would, if we'd have asked them, given us a rundown and stuff, but most of the time, we would just tell them, I just tell us when to talk, basically. You direct it and we'll just follow your lead. I think actually esports people prefer to be a bit in the moment. You know, we don't want things quite as sort of segmented and structured. You know, we kind of like play with it a little bit. You agree?
Yeah, I hate using a teleprompter. I just feel like us as gamers, we're not we're not that way inclined. You know, the people watching, the viewers, they're also playing video games. They are not super like structured in their day-to-day lives when they're playing games, when they're watching games. So why should we have to be like that? Like, I don't know. I feel like I completely agree. You're so right. And I think the cheat code of how you know if some a talent member has just like been shoved into the corner of go live right now is the well anyways, I believe. Yeah. It is always the well anyways.
Sure. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what is interesting is like I imagine obviously in traditional sports and stuff, the analyst desk, they will have both sides of like the argument like planned out ahead of time. Yeah. Whereas yeah, as in esports, like for CS people, I'm wanting to talk about the games on the way to the event with my fellow analyst. And then I'm sitting there like, wait, no, I should save this for the broadcast because it's just there's something so much better if it is genuine in that moment. I don't want to feel like I'm like acting out a conversation that we've pre-planned or that we've had before. I think that's always been the big upside of esports is that it's meant to feel super authentic. I think that's what people want. Yes. And weirdly, like, yeah, I think you do see like traditional sports, like the football stuff now with like Carragher and stuff like that feels like it's kind of taking from old
it
esports.
It is. They're copying us.
Yeah, that's what I say.
They are.
Also, even just talking amongst your colleagues, if you have this sort of, if you have this discourse about a team or a matchup or whatever ahead of time, and I'm not going to name names, but sometimes they might even
take your point, maybe.
Steal your point.
Oh,
exactly.
Weird how that works, isn't it?
They might be the one that brings it up, and I don't think there's malice necessarily in it, but they might not they might not have something directly that they want to talk about, and they remember having this talking point, and they're just thinking, oh yeah, actually,
they're doing that meme, you know, the one where like I made this, like you made this, I made that. They do that. I know what you mean. If you make too good a point when you're in the shuttle, then suddenly all of a sudden they go before you in the lineup, and you're looking at them with horror as they are the first person on the lineup, and they go, so what do you think about Vitality? And they go, I think they're gonna. And you go, that's my hope. I'm about to say that, like, and even better, Yumi, now you just have no points, so you can look like a complete dickhead, like scrambling to come up with it. And you don't want to just be like, yeah, I agree, because I made that point, shut them, give me that back here. So now some people are, and I know what you mean, Yumi, some people I think were evil and did it on purpose. I think some people just do it, like, it's just, it just goes in there and then it does circle around their brain and then it comes out as their thought. Like, I don't think he meant to do it, mate.
Yeah, you almost like have inceptioned them into believing your philosophy, and it's like, well, unless they give you credit before they say
exactly.
It, like, oh yeah, we actually had this talk. We had this talk earlier. And you were mentioning this, blah blah. But it's like, if you know I'm on the desk with you, then why would you say that on my behalf?
By the way, two things though. One, that is why sometimes if it's like going to be a spirited discussion, I will also say like, let's just do this on the desk, mate. Because I actually also think another mistake people make is it's hard to remember when you had a conversation with who and what setting. So sometimes people will be going, it's like you were saying earlier, I'm thinking, I said that in the shuttle, mate. They don't have mics in there. Like, you have to reference that like this was said off camera. Like, they can't access what, it's not like go to Spider-Man issue 13 to find out the origin of Doc. There's no one has access to what I said earlier. And also, here's the trick, Yumi. I'll tell you some advanced dark tech. Is I won't say who, but there was a famous individual in CS particularly who would just nick great points like that if you ever said them in the green room or in the shuttle. So I started going the other way. I started playing him. What I was doing was I wasn't feeding bad points, but I just wouldn't say when I had like a really interesting point on that one. And I would set them up so they would think from all the convo that they know which direction it's going to go. And then I'd throw the curveball. Like, well, I just disagree completely, actually. Because if you ever looked on him overpass, actually, they don't start like that. And then they'd be like, and it's like, well, you know what? Listen, bad teammate, but then again, they were a bad teammate too. So at this point in time, you have to understand, if they're going to 2 foot tackle me, I'm going to stamp them when they go down. That's the analogy, whatever. Not really the best analogy either, but
you
don't
worry.
You
activated my trap card. I knew you could do this.
Exactly. No, low-key, I'm like waiting for them. It'd actually be sad if they'd just been professional and not done it at that point, wouldn't it? I know I've just set up the whole trap card and everything.
And actively turning the desk into PvP.
Yeah.
We love it. No, you know what? I will go back on now is because we have Krakow right now, and they did only hire two analysts.
Yep.
They hired Dupree and Janko to do every day.
There is going to be another person, though. It's just that that's like a mystery icon. And all I'll say is, I've heard who it's going to be. Just bloody buckle up. Just get ready. Just wait. You will see who it's going to be.
Is it you?
I don't do ESL events. No, it wouldn't
welcome
be.
Back
not in Poland. Poland.
Exactly. Listen, I can't lie. That would be fucking hype if suddenly all of a sudden it's like, hey Shark, how about weight loss? They're like, what is that, Thorin's? Who's that? What's he doing there booming around the fucking whatever arena in Krakow? Listen, that'd be hype, but
here
I also might not get
Undertaker.
Out there. Yeah, exactly. By the way, though, jokes aside, go on, what are you saying?
Yeah, I was gonna say, I do think, especially for such a premier event, like, you have to think to yourself as a fan, Dupree and Yanko now have to prep for every single team, single game.
Yes.
Like, these segments will inherently just become very generic, and maybe for like a couple of teams, they'll be able to look a bit more and have a bit more to say. But especially the pre-games, when you're doing every game during the day, you're kind of just sort of vaguely going like, oh, this team's been playing well lately. And that's kind of all you can say, because you don't want to confidently say something that's just wrong, right? You can't just come out and have some really strong take if you don't really know the team that well. So, yeah, I think that is a shame, especially for such a big event, because I think in the group stage now, you're probably just going to get a lot of vague points in this group stage in general, which is a bit of a shame.
By the way, another area I can always tell whether like a former pro or current pro who's not on like a team or at the event, where they do the analysis gig, they almost just think it's a piece of piss. Because some of them will go out there, and like you're saying, they might have to have prepped for 10 teams, but they're thinking, oh, I already know these teams, I've played them. And they'll start just doing that thing where it's like, they could, you know, they could pick an Inferno or Mirage or Dust. Like, first of all, you just did half the map pool there, mate. Like, can we have some specifics? And then secondly, I've heard them do that before where it's like, but that won't happen because the other team bans that. But you don't want to say that, do you? Like, they look like an absolute dickhead. Like, you haven't even fucking done the prep, mate. Like, you haven't looked up the ban of the other team. Also, actually, a bigger point, even though you joke there, like, made it PvP, that is only for people who are like bad actors who are malicious. I actually do think another secret of doing the desk, you know, when like people banter and there's always the fans like, he should have come back with this, well, he should have just said to this guy, you don't know. No, one thing you do miss is actually it isn't PvP when you work a desk. In my opinion, a broadcast is a team, and even if you like mildly roast each other or whatever, you have to do stuff like let that guy get their shot back in, or you have to like not accelerate. And also, you never do the thing where, this is another big pet peeve for me, if someone's making a fucking sick joke or something, you don't just jump in there and steal it, or even worse, as they're about to land the punchline, just add your shit thing on top. Like, yeah, it's not like if that guy did that, it's like, mate, he was about to fucking land the punchline. Like, you have to also understand, it's like, I think I always say it's like wrestling. Yeah, they fight each other on camera, but like, they agree before who wins the match, what happens. And at the end of the day, they want the whole show to pop off. That's what everyone's here to see. So there is also like a team element. Like, we're not really just individuals doing, getting our fucking money and just battling each other for space on camera. Hopefully we are also like part of a unit. We all want to succeed and actually make each other's jobs better and more fun as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's turn-based as well, right? There is a bit of back and forth, and you can jump in at certain points, but like you're saying, when someone's on the lead up to a move,
I like that phrase. That's such gamer phrasing. Man, you just meant you take turns, but you meant it sound like Final Fantasy, right? You take turns to go forwards and attack. I love it. Okay.
Yeah, there's QTEs in here.
Okay.
Yeah, I can jump in at certain points,
true.
But sometimes if you press at the wrong moment, it's a bad.
It actually works. The analogy works. That's the best part. It's Resident Evil, but yeah, true.
Yeah.
Dumb. It's also, it is also good because I'm just imagining it now as like you having some secret stat for some player. Like, actually, he has a 0.9 rating in the last 3 months. Boom. That's the slam dunk.
I think the only really like important part is like when I'm desk hosting, if there are like key players that my analysts want to talk about, it's important to at least know who the players are.
Sure.
Just so then we can also request for the producer, if I feel like, okay, this person is going to have a longer point to make, can we get a graphic of this? That way it's not just us, you know, perma on camera, this person making their point, but we can also support it with graphics because some people, you know, it will stick better if it's a visual graphic and you can see that visually. So, yeah, I think it's, for me at least, I find it useful to know who the player is that they want to talk about. And then when we take a look at, you know, the information I have on them, what they kind of roughly want to talk about, then we can request graphics, which, you know, a lot of the time you might not be able to do that, which I'm lucky, I guess, go next.
Yes.
If I could pivot slightly, I remember, you said earlier the idea that, you know, for us as talent, you know, often you take what comes and you'll do whatever. I find that it's just kind of applicable for a lot of different positions in esports. And there've been events before as well where there are people that are assigned a job that is not their main job or their main pursuit, and they just don't do it properly, or they're not as attentive as they should be to that position. And I won't name the event that this happened at, but I remember doing a finals where someone was brought on as like a stage hand that was supposed to essentially direct us on the desk and, you know, help us set up everything and sort of serve as our liaison. That just didn't understand the role at all. And so when things went wrong on the broadcast, he wouldn't flag it. He was just kind of spaced out or whatever. And it becomes very frustrating when, you know, a lot of us and a lot of our colleagues are largely passion driven. You know, you're doing this because you love it and you want everything to work and function. And then you work with some people that are a little bit more, maybe just phoning it in, and just seeing this opportunity of this job as a progression point further down the line. So there's an element of like frustration that not everyone is as invested as are in seeing everything succeed in the way that it should be, you know, especially if you're not per se like, I know this is something you've talked about, Thorin, but like sometimes when you work with certain tournament organizers, English broadcasts are not the primary broadcast. And so you are far more secondary. Yeah. They do not care about you. You're kind of left to your own devices. Especially in those scenarios, I feel like it's increasingly more frustrating because one, you can't talk to everybody in their native language, and it's, you know, sure, people you can talk to are far more limited, but then you're also left with people that sometimes aren't the most competent people. They're the secondary people, right? So,
I mean, I'll give you an example. I had an example, this is many years ago now, where basically for quite a big event, they hired someone who had never, ever worked as a talent manager. And this person, I'm actually going to give them the benefit of the doubt here, even though actually what they did was still ridiculous. I just assumed, because they were from Eastern Europe and had fairly limited English, that they had just literally translated the words talent manager. So they came in, and even though, by the way, a talent manager is almost like, even though there is an element of managing, it's more like a euphemism for like you're the runner who goes and gets the water and figures out when dinner is and talks to the producer and comes back with information. It's more like a supportive role. They took the manager part as they're our boss, and they were doing mad shit. Like a caster, I won't say who again, just went like, can I get some food like in an hour? And they went, well, yeah, you're welcome to go and get it from the concession stand anytime you want. He's like, no, but can you just bring it to me? And this person went, that's not my job. And everyone in the room was just like, that is literally your job, though. Like, what? Like, and so this caused like massive confusion. It was like mad drama because this person thought that like they were like our boss just in the office. Like, Jeeves reports by the end of the day. It'd be like the biggest caster in the world as well, by the way, who's used to being waited on hand and foot. Because again, yes, all the casters sit on fucking saffron pillows with rose petals dangling above them all, eating grapes as when they're off camera on cast, while us analysts are just down there, goblins in the mine, fucking cranking out stats and working on it. It's totally like that, guys. I'm not exaggerating in any way. But no, I've had some mad ones like that where people just, like, didn't know the role, or even worse, as I was saying, sometimes they just put like an intern on the job, and maybe they just out of pure like innocence don't know what the role involves, and they're just sitting there sort of waiting for you. Like, I've had times also where I would message and be like, oh, can we get some food? And they'd just be like, yes. And you'd be like, going back to the, what? Like, well, when? Like, well, what's going on? And then they would just arrive when it arrived, mate. Because, by the way, they're surely one of the biggest topics for everyone. Isn't managing food one of the most difficult things at events?
Oh, God. Yeah. It's also, it can be the most nightmarish as well if it's done poorly. I mean, I'll still always remember being, well, this was not the event's fault, but being food poisoned from a flight going into an event where you just, I mean, we're only there for 4 or 5 days. So this was for the Mongolian RMR for Blast Paris. And I was just deathly ill. It was me and a bunch of the other players that were on the same flight as me.
Oh, I've all got it, right.
Yeah, so a bunch of us were just wrecked for the entire week. And it was, it can be terrible because you feel like you're letting down not only your colleagues, letting down the employer, you're letting yourself down as well. It's like, if I'm not giving my best performance, sometimes, you know, you're only as good as your last broadcast, essentially, sometimes, so... the whole situation can be nightmarish, and food is, I mean, it's fuel. You know, if you can't have that properly, then you're likely to give a bad show.
Come on, Hawker, what's your situation? Are you just happy-go-lucky with food? Do you need it to be specific?
No, I think I'm pretty chill in general. Okay. I think my stomach can handle a lot, which is good. It's good for me.
Okay.
Stronger than me, mate.
Yes, just strong. I think that even the best case scenario for food, though, is like the catering on site is really good, And then, you know, if you are on the desk, you're still going to have to eat at some point during a game, which, you know, you might just sort of miss either important rounds or maybe like for a half, you're sitting there, you're still eating and you're like, well, I couldn't really fully focus because I'm eating. So that's like best case scenario. But yeah, sometimes you do have, I think the worst are times where it's not like a massive event. You're maybe just in a small studio environment. And sometimes you're a bit like, oh, you've kind of like forgotten you have to feed us is how it feels. And then normally it ends up being like, sometimes it will just be, okay, you have to ask the talent manager to just go and find you food somewhere. And oftentimes, the other thing is, sometimes I've done events that are American events on European time. And you're like, what food places are open? Okay, it's McDonald's every day. We're having McDonald's every day of our lives. And yeah, that does get to you eventually. It's weird because it can just be so varied. Like some events actually are very good. And I think for the most part, they've got way better. But yeah, sometimes you do sit there and you think to yourself, like, did you just go like not think about the food part? Did this just,
it's when, like I say, you say, when's food in the group chat? And they go, it'll be here in 2 hours. You're like, it's already fucking like 2 p.m. or something. Like there's some wild ones like that.
Yeah.
We could tell they forgot or they didn't put the order in or something, or the catering has to be the same one that feeds the fans, gets your meal done as well. There's that one too. There's some mad ones.
I was low-key hoping Hawker would mention it, but we were reminiscing not long ago about the food situation in esports. And Hawker, do you remember the box of cheese? That's it. That was all that was provided. We're hoping for lunch. And you know,
just on a farm or something. Where is it? What the fuck?
Honestly, we were in one of those studios and literally a styrofoam box is presented to one of the talent. He's opened it and it's just a block of cheese. No bread, no anything. Okay. And you know what the cheese was? It was just camembert cheese that was stone cold. So cheese that needs to be baked.
Yeah, I think this was like their vegan option or something, or veggie option or something. Okay. I guess it must have been veggie or whatever.
It was like, the veggie option. Okay. Yeah. Just
eat a block of cheese.
I know, that's mad. That's like saying, oh, vegetarian option, then you just send the burger buns, you know, with no burger. It's like, it has to be real food. Can't just be random. Smooth years at work in the event, shout out to that reference there from the old days. It's all good.
Listen, sometimes it's not even just, it's not on the tournament organizer to manage your food. Sometimes as well, yourself to understand what you can and can't have. I'll still always remember doing this, an ESL Challenger event years ago now with, I'll say his name. I'm sure he won't mind me telling the story. With Eternal J.
Okay.
And he ordered a pad thai. It was the first time he'd ever really had this type of food before. You know, he's not exactly like exploring different cuisines frequently. So he's had this pad thai, and it comes with a little box of, you know, peanuts or nuts that you're supposed to sort of
scared already. Go on.
Sprinkle around. Yeah, exactly. And we're all encouraging him to do it. You know, he said he's not allergic to peanuts. He's, you know, he has almonds. He's been fine with nuts in the past. And we're like, it changes the experience of the pad thai. He has it. He enjoys it. He goes on to do a broadcast. And then midway through, he's like, man, my throat is like itchy. My neck is itchy. Like I'm feeling some type of way. And so I think Naokai has to go in back after his shift had sort of clocked out to actually cover for him for like the third map. I think, you know, Jay, I think, managed a map, maybe two maps, and one was going into like overtimes and whatever. And then I think Nao took over at the end. And then at like 2 or 3 a.m., him and the talent manager had to go out to the hospital because he couldn't sleep. He couldn't breathe properly.
Fucking hell.
And the absolute trooper, you know, next day after going to the hospital, still on like the morning shift for the next games, and you know, he was showing off his feathers like a brand spanking new patron. Like he was fine the full next day, but you know, that's on him basically for not recognizing that he has an allergy for things, and maybe he thought he didn't, but then he developed it over time. I don't know, but. It's not, you know, we have some encounters that are the TO or the airlines or some logistics down the line's fault, but sometimes it might just be us, actually.
But so. Israel,
he still jokes about it, though. He still jokes about it and talks about it. Yeah, no, it doesn't really bother him so much. But we also have so many events where, like, you don't actually know what you're eating.
Oh, sure.
There's so many events where, like, there's no labels, there's no information about what's actually in the food as well. And I think, like you guys said, I think we have definitely gotten better with time, but that doesn't really, you know, we still have some events here and there, which like kind of overlook the small things.
No, I will say, like I used to really hate back in the day the on-site catering, because obviously it would actually be really bad quality often, unfortunately, because it was just for everyone who worked the event to eat. It has gotten a lot better. Like now, usually it's like pretty well cooked and it's warm and all this. Because there's nothing, by the way, one of my biggest triggers of all time is when you've been waiting like 3 hours for some food and then they bring some food and then that's just when you're going on the desk and then you come back, it's all just cold. It's like, oh, fucking hell. Like that, my trigger is fucking cold chips, mate. Like they're supposed to be all popping out the pack, all steam. All lovely and crispy. I don't want to come back and it's all fucking, it's like props at that pop food. You're like, no, it's just suffering. It's just suffering. But I bet it was a great 10 minutes ago. Brilliant. Now I'm in a mood because you fucked up my chips. Don't ever fuck an Englishman's chips up. Understand that. All your foreign tears. That is sacred. Also, one thing I do love is, because if possible, sometimes, it's not even just that the food's bad with the catering. Sometimes it's like there's only one choice. You know, it's like, oh, there's some chicken in a cream sauce. I'm saying, I'm not really feeling that, am I? So one thing I used to love to do back in the day is just see how far you can push it. Like, see if what, maybe I can convince this talent manager who in theory is supposed to get the catered food and bring it to me, or, you know, like go to a concession stand. Maybe I can convince them to leave the venue and go on a little mission for me as if they were like my Uber Eats driver. And I've actually done it before when there was an event, I think it was Starlight of Berlin or something, where it was in this like big venue in Berlin, but only across the road is like a bunch of like, you know, like fucking convenience stores and takeaway food places. And so one day, like halfway in the event, I convinced them, when I think it was like, you know, going to end early on a day or something, I convinced them, like, oh, could you just run over and get us like a Five Guys or something? And because they made the mistake of doing it one time, then as the event went on, it was like, you know, in shows like House of Cards, where it's politics and they're doing a vote, you want to rig the votes. So you have to go to everyone beforehand, like, oh, would you agree to go on our side if I give you the... And then at the end, you're like, we've got the votes, we've got 40 votes. It's through. By the end of the event, I was just getting rounded up like 5-6 talent. Like, look, if we all independently ask for the Five Guys at the end, they'd probably have to just break and go and get it. All I remember at the end of this event was every day just big milkshakes. And, yeah, it's all great in here. Yeah, loving the games. Great times. Thank you, everyone. Big thumbs up for this style of Berlin. Great major. Love it all.
Nice.
I don't know, though, man. I feel like I get so scared of even like asking for like coffees.
You think you're worried they'll think you're a diva?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And I feel like so many people have this like opinion of talent being divas.
Sure, yeah.
And like, I would hate it if, I don't know, people perceive me as being a diva. But there's just sometimes, bro, I cannot function if I don't have a coffee. And
yeah,
the time it will take for you to go and get one is just not feasible to be able to make yes. it in a break or before the game yeah. starts and stuff. Do you guys ever get worried about being
but
a diva?
One thing you're saying that's really valid, though, is it's actually an area where you're not being a diva, because you just nailed it. The way you phrased it was, I can't operate unless like this certain condition is met. If at the end of the day, one thing that you are absolutely self-directed for at every esports event is you have to perform, otherwise you don't get hired again and they don't think you did a good job. And sometimes everyone's different. They don't know what you need. Like, so one person might need, I don't know, quiet before the game. One person might need a specific cup of coffee, exactly the right amount of time. And there's a bunch of things. And even though it might seem individual, it's one area, by the way, where it might sound mad, but I no longer do that thing that people would do when they read like a tabloid newspaper, where you hear about like those singers who are like fucking doing like a Beyonce type concert. And you hear, oh, they've got this rider, we want these crisps. And you go, wait a minute, if I was like a super millionaire who's doing a job where I choose to come out of my mansion and go to some city I've never been to, and then I have to do like a 6-hour show with all wardrobe changes, I would want exactly that drink beforehand. I wouldn't want like, oh, so we couldn't get that, but here's some orange juice with bits in. Like, I would want it to be what I need it to be to mentally prepare and feel like I'm doing my job. I know it can seem like you'd be a diva, but in some sense you're also like trying to ensure the performance is consistent and you hit all your marks and stuff. That's a factor too.
There is definitely a fear, though, you know, of being perceived as being too needy or too demanding or something. Maybe diva is not the way that I would think about it, but I was like, I don't want to be a burden, basically.
Sorry, stick with me. I'll get you the Five Guys manager. Next time, mate. You can just come in on my order. Sorry, it won't make it look like it's all right.
As long as you can represent the whole, I'm fine with that.
Exactly.
That is normally what I find, though. I find normally someone else will break before me, so yes. I feel okay. Normally someone else will ask.
Oh, he's actually doing it as a tactic. I like this. He's on some NASCAR like drifting shit where you're like waiting for them until you go behind him. Oh, okay, I see how it is.
Yeah, literally. No, it is true. But also, you are right in that I think another thing that will go underestimated if people haven't like traveled a lot is just being away from home. Like, It's such a weird, well, firstly, you're quite likely to get ill, which is already a big thing. And normally by the end of events, a few people are ill. But secondly, just going back to a hotel room every day after working for so many hours. And then you kind of just want to be able to turn your brain off. You want to be able to not make decisions at that point because your whole day has been using your brain for stuff, you know? And I'm not going to lie. I talked to some of my friends that work normal office jobs, and they tell me stuff like, yeah, I just worked from home today. I worked for like 1 hour, 2 hours. And I'm like, okay, an esports event, your brain is basically on the whole time. Like, I think it is a little different in that extent, at least from like normal office jobs, which I don't have experience with. Like super manual labor, I'm sure is very hard in its own way. Don't get me wrong. But yeah, there is something about that I think, you know, you need to basically limit the decisions you have to make in a lot of other areas of your life. Because otherwise, like, your brain is just going to get frazzled by the end.
But also, that sounds like a joke. But even just being on, I always tell people this. One of the reasons I always wear like weird, like football material jersey type things when I do go on camera, it's because being under lights is hot. And then thinking and talking, you're on, your brain knows that you're sort of performing and you sweat a bit more. And you definitely, I'm not joking, consume more calories. Like, you absolutely do. And so the other thing about events is you're not just doing like, oh, you just got your meal in the afternoon. You usually have to be drinking something at all times for the water to keep your throat from going dry. Then also you're eating because you've got to fuel yourself the whole way. And actually, then the other dreaded one is, how do you manage? And some people definitely do not manage it well. How do you manage the caffeine intake? If you get that wrong, you will get through the day, but you'll be frazzled at the end of it. If you do that badly, you'll be that person. It's the worst feeling in the world. You know, the one where you're in the green room, keep catching like that. That's the worst. That feeling is the worst feeling in the world. Also, you're not in like your bedroom. You're looking around when you're dropping off like that, and you just, did anyone notice that? Did I get away with it? Like, it's fucking awkward. You actually have to time a lot of these things like an RPG with fucking health bars and on the hood or some shit.
It's 100% when you know you have to wait for things the way you feel like the sleepiest. I could feel that way in the green room waiting for the game I'm going to cast later. And then as soon as it gets to the cast, like, wired, because I know I have a task to accomplish. You know, but you also, like you said, you have to manage how you react to the sleepiness in the first place. Because if you oversaturate yourself with caffeine, you're going to be, at least I've been super self-conscious. Like, do I look like I'm wired right now? Like, do people think I look strange? Like, am I holding my eyes too wide? Like, what's happening? Everything feels a little off that way. And I think even just the pacing with food, this might just be a me thing, but I'm always very self-conscious that I'm going to end up like, oh, I've just had food 10, 15 minutes before I'm going to go live on a cast. Am I going to accidentally like burp, or is like, is there going to be like some, like, was the food spicy? Am I going to have like some acid reflux?
There's a lot going on inside your head before these bloody events. I thought you were just chilling watching the games the whole time. Are they noticing? Am I a fraud? And what if did I eat early enough?
I try not to eat or like have too many things that are like outside of the purview before a cast, because I always feel like it's going to affect the quality of my work. I know some people feel like they need food before they do the thing. But for me, it's far more like, food feels more like a reward. Like, okay, I'm done. I'm in the clear. I can move on with my life. You know, I'm always. I guess I'm personally worried about stuff like that, because if you miss the cough button for a moment, like, the last thing you want to do is send.
I just appreciate. I thought this was just going to be us telling stories. It's become like a therapy session room, hasn't it? He's like. Think about my reward. Like a reward. I know it sounds mean. It's Dickensian, doesn't it? Fucking hell.
I don't live a prison lifestyle. I treat that
I'm kind of opposite. I think the main thing I would worry about is like eating too much and then like having that food coma feeling of like, oh, I just feel like groggy. And then you feel like you're not getting your words out as snappy as you want.
Yes.
But also that's going to happen at some point in the day. If you have a long day, you'll have a segment that you come away from and you're like, I just felt a bit like tired and a bit off. And you just kind of have to accept that. It's always weird though, because you also have, normally you'll have maybe like a week or two before an event in Counter-Strike, maybe, where you're at home and you're thinking to yourself, you all do this. You watch the game and you're like, oh, if I was there analyzing this, I would have had this.
You forget all of this stuff the second you're not there. You forget all the behind the scenes, don't you?
100%. Because you're like, it's such a different environment. You're at home, you're fully comfortable. Yeah. You have all the time to think. And then you get there and you're like, oh, I haven't got the same source.
By the way, when I joke about having like the five guys, I'll tell you, I'm actually serious though. I will only do that on the last game though, when I know like there's, you know, like an hour left. So, cause one thing actually I do think is also underrated is I don't want like at midday to have like a massive meal, like you say, that's going to like affect my performance. If anything, like one that if I ever do takeaway at the events, I always do sushi when it's early on. I do some like super light, you know, nothing too heavy. It's just going to give me a little bit of energy. I know exactly almost how long it'll last, you know. You couldn't have like a fucking roast dinner before you do the match or something. Yeah, you'd be dead, wouldn't you?
So yeah, if you think about it, you do reward yourself then by the last game. Yeah. It is a reward. I'm with you, Beyond. I'm fully with you on this. You got to just like wait until towards the end of the day.
Yeah, it's like breakfast and then snacks. Like it's full on just snacking until meals afterwards. That's at least how I treat it. But I understand that. I also operate on a very weird diet pattern, even in my normal life. So, but I do bear a lot of sympathy for people that do have like strict food restrictions, because that is like, for me, I could always Wolt or Uber Eats or whatever I feel like I need in that moment, but for them the options are always far limited, especially if there are some countries that are a little bit less accommodating to say halal food or vegan food, or you know,
the ones where the person says like, oh, I have a very specific set of allergies or needs, and then the person, someone will really turn to them and you're like, what century are we in now? And they'll just go, can you just pick that out of the food? You're like, no, that's not what I meant. Like, yeah, I mean, actually, I die if I eat it. Yeah. You know, like, it can't touch the food, you know. That's a real thing. Yeah. I've heard that before, mate.
I'm so glad I'm not allergic to stuff, because I think a good amount of the time I'll just take some food from catering and I'm like, let's find out what this is, as I put it in my mouth. And I'm like, okay, it's a beef or whatever. don't. But it is true. And I have seen people with allergies and I'm like, I would not want to be you right now. Like this is awful.
I appreciate the way you guys everyone on the show for some of the articulates, like you're all in peep show or something the whole time. Like, oh, God, I'm not bloody him. He's got allergies. Oh, what's this? Oh, it's going in my mouth. Beef, I think. Tastes like chicken. Like, fucking hell. What's going on? I thought everyone was just normal people. We're all weirdos. By the way, along those lines, though, one thing we've backed into here, which should be one of the number one things everyone behind the scenes wants fans to know, is the sleep situation at events is one of the most difficult for everyone to manage. Like, even beyond things like, are you responsible? Do you go to bed on time? You know, we're not talking about people who stay up till 3 a.m. drinking at the bar every night, but even things like, you know, there's a stat that they say, and it's a nightmare when you hear this, that they claim it takes one day to move your like circadian rhythm an hour forwards or backwards, right? You need one day per hour. So the idea is if you went like 7-8 hours, you should go a week early and do that, which is a joke, because if you go to an esports event in America, you just work the next day or one day later after that. So essentially that would almost be impossible to even shift out. How do you guys manage that stuff? Because I will say, I feel like everyone when I'm at events, I can, especially a couple of days in, I can always see who's struggling, who's like managed to nail it that time, or it's the right time zone for them. You can always see it. It will affect your performance or how you at least feel about the event.
I mean, I always take melatonin with me, kind of take melatonin for the first few days, but even then my body's really weird, man. Like, I will wake up at 6 a.m and I cannot for the life of me fall back asleep. Once I'm awake, that's it, I'm up. And like, if I wake up in the middle of the night, that's it. I'm awake. I can't fall back asleep.
That's also the nightmare where you like look on the schedule. It's like, you've got the second game. You're like, brilliant, lie in. Then all of a sudden you just wake up 7 a.m, but my game isn't until 2. Like, oh, it's the worst feeling in the world, isn't it?
And then you're literally laying there and you're like, if I fall asleep right now, I might get 5 hours of sleep. And then you look at the time again and an hour.
By the way, don't you find as well a weird thing that there's like I find there's a psychological phenomenon that if like you're saying, I know I could in theory still get 3 hours more, it'll make it harder to actually get those hours. Like, it's almost like I'm stressing myself to not fall asleep. Oh no, it's 2.5 hours. Oh, it's only going to be 2 hours. And then like, you get like a 20-minute nap before or something, mad. You're like, what the hell? Why'd I do that?
Yeah, 100%. Like, and then like when I wake up early, it's all, I don't know if you guys get this as well, but my brain immediately from the moment I wake up, if I'm at an event, is in work mode. And then it's like, okay, who are we going to talk about today first on the desk? Which games have we got first? Even if I'm like not looking at a screen, not on my phone, not on my laptop, not prepping or anything, my brain just like defaults to what do we have to do today? And then once you start thinking about it, that's it. Like, I would say it's pretty normal to do events on like 4 hours of sleep at this point.
Easy. It's another thing, as you're saying, Orca, when you're at home, you never think about something like that. So I'm sure the fans just, that's why the worst thing is, you know, you brain fart and say the wrong name, but you obviously by the context meant the right person. But then they think you're just, it doesn't even know you, the bloody IGL of spirit. It's like, fucking hell, mate. I've had like 3.5 hours. Look at my eyes. Bloody hell. Oh no, sorry, wait, the makeup woman did all the foundation. Yeah, my eyes are fine. Bloody hell. What? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to like big continent shifts, I actually try and sort of like pre-sleep on that schedule before going out to mitigate some of the problems, you know, if provided I don't have things to do in the lead up. You know, I will ruin a few days to try and make my days abroad.
You put a lot of thought into this fucking part of the job. I thought like the rest of us, you just rolling with the punch. You're fucking, you're prepping it all, strategizing, planning it out 3 days before I start, 8 p.m. I love it. Okay. Well,
that's the thing though. If you do like South American online broadcasts and then Chinese, like I've done South America, I've done Chinese like broadcasts from home. And so I have to inverse my sleep.
Oh, you do it anyway at home, right? I see what you mean.
Exactly.
Right.
So, I just find it as part of the job, you know. Right. A part of me is like, there is a peeve that I have that, like, you know, I understand complaining about it because it's uncomfortable and it's annoying to do, but it's also what we sign up for. You know, it's hardly the worst downside of the job when you're traveling. And
by the way, I also tell people as well, like, if you work for the event, don't take it seriously when we mourn. Like, the mourn is just like a pressure release valve, isn't it? Like, you do that and also it's like a camaraderie thing, isn't it? Like, nah, bloody hell, we're up all night. But then you just get on with your day in a way, like, it lets it go and you can pass on. You're not really actually, like, seething about it. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I think I'm pretty lucky in that I'm a pretty deep sleeper, but I don't know about you guys. I cannot sleep on like a plane or like sitting up at all. And this fucker Dinko, I sat next to him on a flight. I had to climb over this guy to go to the toilet.
Oh, I hate people like
tried
that.
To shake this the guy worst, away, aren't they? And I'm like, yeah.
You know, the ones where they're like, oh, I was asleep before I took off. Then all I heard was, we're now landing. Like, oh, I hate you. I hate your guts, mate.
That's what annoys me, is I know it's possible and some of these fuckers have it like that, and I'm sitting there like, cool, okay, I've just got to sleep through what should be an overnight flight, but then I'm going to get there on no sleep. And you do what you can, the energy drinks come out. But I think in general, after a couple of days, I'm normally adjusted, like, okay enough that I'm like, all right, I could manage. And normally you'll arrive and you'll have like a media day, which as a talent member oftentimes isn't too much.
Yeah, exactly.
At least for me, I'm like, okay, I'll just do whatever and then somewhat adjust, which makes it somewhat doable. But yeah, it's like you said, you're not going to be in ideal conditions.
Either way, I'll tell you what the actual or another trap, if you're a rookie at doing this job, but it's actually, even if you're a vet, it's one of the hardest things you can do. If you ever do a trip to like America or somewhere where you're really fucked up and then you have problems like oxes, like sleeping on a plane or something, if you have any of those issues, one of the worst things ever is everyone who's done it knows the meta is, say you arrive and it's like 2 p.m. local time, you don't go to sleep. Do not go to the room, check in and go, you know what, quick little nap, that'd be good. Because if you do that, it'll set your whole rhythm for the whole event, and that's exactly when you're going to be working, so you'll be fucked. You'll actually feel really tired then, and you'll be waking up at 5 a.m. definitely, because you'll be on like your old rhythm. But the problem is, it's easy to say that and then go to the event and go, well, when I get there, what I'll do is I'll go to the bar and have a couple of drinks and I'll talk to some people. But the amount of times, this, now I've given it a few times and go, man, surely this time it'll be different, just a quick nap, and then you have those 3 hours, it ruins the whole the rest of the trip. You're just like, curse you, travel guy, why did you do that to me? It actually ruins the whole event. But if you can do it, if you can actually stay up to like midnight and you can keep it all legit, you might actually have a chance to have a normal rhythm after that.
There's nothing worse than convincing yourself.
You like chat to people beforehand and you're like, okay, let's go out. Once we land, everybody gets like 1 hour and then we'll go out for food. We'll go to the mall.
Yes.
Once you have other people around you, you're kind of like all in it together and holding each other accountable. That's the best strat.
Yeah, because if you convince yourself that it's a good idea, it's always a bad idea at the end. You know, you're just like, yep, I should have just listened to myself a week ago, actually.
By the way, I'll tell you an underrated detail of working events as well. This is how you know that when you're on camera, literally you sweat and it affects your body. How many times when when you have like a couple of hours in the evening and you're going to go for food or drink with someone, do people say, I have to just jump in the shower first? People don't just go straight to their room and drop the bag and come out. You want to feel like, you know, you want to reset a little bit and feel like also you want to take all the bloody work makeup off as well, scrubbing away at that shit. Like, I also learned that there's another thing I didn't know about makeup. On the ones that they do the heavy foundation, it's like, what the hell's happening to this towel? Holy shit, look at that. What's going on? It's outrageous.
Yeah, so many guys just use the makeup wipe that the makeup artist provides. And I'm always the one that's like, make sure you guys wash your face when you get back. Otherwise, you're going to break out with a ton of acne afterwards.
I've got some breaking news for all the men. It turns out there's this thing called cleanser that you actually need to take that off. It turns out splashing water doesn't actually do it. Now it is even waterproof. They've got the tech. The tech's no good. What about one thing you said earlier that I actually think is, you know what, it's a pet peeve of mine, even though I understand for some people this is just a job, or, you know, maybe they're not as interested in this game, or they're going to wait till the final. One thing I do get pissed off with is when people who are talent are there, and I'm sort of in a weird way, I am like you, because I come from the old school where you didn't get paid much. It was just cool to be the person picked to do the event and to be the guy who casts the event or talks about the match, and you would have been the fan watching. There's a part of you feels like it's fucking awesome to be here. There are some people who it just becomes every day for them. They're just like, oh, it's whatever, it's a Tuesday, or they're like, no, who cares about this game, man? Hope that's a 2-0. Let's get on to the next match. I do feel like, as long as it's not like the first game of the day or something, you have to also like authentically be into watching the games and actually enjoying the event and sort of embrace it, etc. And don't, and like if it's a great game, don't really turn to people and go, I hope this is just quick 2-0. I'm watching a fucking match. Isn't that what we're here for? To watch some fucking dope game that's going to be remembered and everyone's enjoying. You also, I think you've got to, you can't fake it. You have to sort of actually really like it and be into it to some degree to make the job worth doing, right?
Yeah, and I think there's definitely there are some people that, you know, like you said, because it's every day and they're doing so many events, it's like it all sort of merges into one. You know, I think even just, you know, I didn't work the tier one events last year, but even just watching them, it felt like certain games did blend into other games, and
sure,
it made it much more difficult for me to distinguish like all this crazy play that I remember seeing between Spirit and FaZe. I couldn't remember directly which event that would have been because it just kept on happening. So I can imagine if you're working all of those events, it becomes even more monotonous, essentially, because you have to put a lot of critical thinking into the first couple of encounters, and then the next few are like, oh, well, I saw this like a week ago, and so I'm rehashing the same points, aren't I? So, and most people that are working that event are also your colleagues, so everything is a lot similar. It's what I think puts me off the sort of closed loop system for a lot of talent hiring. And I would say this for tier one, tier two stuff in general, is that, you know, exposing yourself to more people, I think, actually does help engage and make the events a little bit more distinctive. All right. And probably makes them more slightly less monotonous, even just from an analytical or green room point of view, just because there's a slight shift in the dynamic. It's a lot harder to feel, a lot harder to get too comfortable, I suppose, which I think it's a positive, because, like you said, you have to be. I feel as if you should be engaged. You should be enjoying every moment, but it's hard to. I mean, every job, if you're clocking in every single day,
sure,
you know, you could be an artist and love your job. You could be a musician and love your job. But there are certain days you'll go into the office and just think, I'm just kind of phoning it in a little bit.
Yeah, it can definitely depend on like the matches as well. I find the hardest is when you have an actual like great match, and then afterwards you have one where you're like, sure, this is like some tier two and tier three.
It's gonna be terrible.
Like, that is tough. But yeah, like especially like you said, for the really good games, like come on, you've got to be like especially into it. And that's the other tricky thing sometimes, is like you're trying to manage your energy levels, and sometimes I'll be doing like the game that's after the game that's on right now, and I'll be watching the game and I'll be so into it, I'll be getting so hyped, and then I'm like, oh shit, I've got like too hyped already. Nice. And I've got to come back down again, which is always awkward. But yeah, I'm with you. Like, I do think like pretty much any tier one Counter-Strike event, like pretty much any game, unless there's some weird circumstance where it's like some team that shouldn't be there, for the most part, like there's always going to be some level of interest. I think that there's always going to be things you can pick up on, even if it's just like one player on that team that's good. Like, come on, there's got to be someone that you're excited to see.
Sure.
And yeah, I'm with you that like I think it's super interesting, especially when you first come into the top tier events. You bring like an energy of excitement, which I think is like really nice. And I actually think the top talent really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Because it reinvigorates it for them. But then also because you're like the new face in, I feel like oftentimes within 1 or 2 days, a few of the top talents will be a bit like, oh, I hope this is a quick one. Oh, this is a shit game. And then it brings you down. You're like, oh, I can't bring my little childlike excitement because they don't seem as excited as me. And I don't want to ruffle the feathers. So yeah, it can be a bit frustrating sometimes, but I'm with you. Like you only do this, especially for this long, if you like really love it.
By the way, one thing you're getting at there, which I think is mad underrated, is there's a reason why when I say I want to work events, I don't just literally mean any event. I also mean with certain people. Like, that's actually a massive factor as to whether I'm going to enjoy the event. Like, it's not an exaggeration. Anyone here who's worked with him knows that working with Richard Lewis isn't just great because he's great on the desk. It's probably one of the most fun people to be in a green room with. Like, essentially, he does create an atmosphere there where it's like a really fun vibe and people are all talking and connect. People aren't just sat siloed on their phone, or, you know, people aren't just not talking because they're... Like, somehow he's like the agent that makes all the fucking fun happen behind the scenes, and it does make it really memorable. Like, you do almost feel like you were with a bunch of mates when you're watching the event.
I literally said this to you guys at Espo. I literally said, this is the funnest event I've ever worked, which was really weird for me because we had a very limited number of talent members.
Yeah.
And for me, it was like the first time I've ever experienced, like, oh my God, this is actually like a fun environment. People are actually hanging out after broadcast, before broadcast, we're like going for food and stuff. But also you're not, everyone isn't just sat in the green room in silence, like making their own notes and stuff. It's more of a discussion. You're kind of learning from each other and setting each other up for like when you do go on broadcast. And if someone has a really interesting point that they'd want to learn more about, they bring that up. And I don't know, I just feel like working with you guys was amazing at Espo. It's so much fun. And I think that's a big part of the event looking good as well, because sure, if you get along with each other off camera and the conversation is good and you're bantering with each other off camera, naturally that happens on camera. It doesn't need to be forced. Like, the energy is there and it translates so well for people that are watching as well.
It also sort of lifts the curtain a little bit. You know, I used to think of, you know, I used to think of Yanko as a bit of like a stone sheet. But I did notice that as he did more broadcasts and more analyst work, he did some like commentary for ESL Pro League. Like, that guy just has like hella one-liners.
Yeah.
And he comes in with some like funny jokes. And, you know, I think it takes other people to bring that out of him necessarily in sort of the right environment. And
yes,
I think over time that has been nurtured. You know, I think there's many instances, and it's probably the counter argument to bringing in outside people is that what if that ruins the dynamic that you've already shown is proven to work? Or what the worst case scenario is, this person, you know, there's beef created between new elements as well, right? So there's a certain level of risk.
But actually, I won't mention names, but there was once someone who came into the town. Eventually, they got settled and they became a part of the furniture. Don't worry, guys, had a happy ending. But they did come into the green room that was like a me, Richard Lewis type green room. And all I'll say is, like, 10 minutes in, they actually, even though they were the new person there, they turned to us and they just went like, are we really going to be making jokes like that in here? And all I'll say is this, I'm not the guy who just goes, oh, sorry, I was just like, well, you're up for it, just fuck off, mate. You've got here 5 minutes ago, who the fuck are you? So anyway, that started on a bad note, but luckily in the end, they got it, they got the vibe. They also realised eventually, by the way, that like another reason why you do that as well is that it's also a way of letting off steam. When you're on camera, you can't make a mistake, you can't drop a clanger, you can't say the wrong word, you have to be really careful even how you criticise people. I actually think, no joke, if you're an analyst, it's actually good to be able to watch like a fan in the green room and be like, oh, you fucking dickhead, why didn't you diffuse it like that? I predicted you win this game. You can't do that as the analysis. You have to be like, I've even seen, by the way, Yanko himself is good at that. He's raw as fuck in the back set, but then he'll come out like, I think the way Device played with the AWP there wasn't really optimal for the way that the T side was. Like, all right, man, I don't know what you really said in the green room, but okay. You have to love a bit of steam too.
Yeah, and you can still get flamed by players and managers for being too harsh, or fans being like, you know, I think that's the other element is like, yes, people are on camera, they're you know, you're putting yourself out there, and by doing that you are subject to criticism and contrast. But how many people work in jobs that are going to have people actively either looking for mistakes or trying to get you fired by your employers?
Sure.
Because if you do decide that you're going to take a slightly negative view on someone on this person's game or this team's game, you will get messages. You know, I know for a fact I've worked before on online broadcast watching Portuguese Counter-Strike.
Okay.
And I set, you know, this was Seoul many, many years ago. And I remember criticizing them in a game where they were playing poorly. But the reason we put it through that lens is because we set high expectations.
Right.
They were on a good roll, blah, blah, blah. And then I get messages from my employer at the time going, hey, guys, we need you to take a more neutral point of view and be far less biased. We got complaints about you being biased. It's like, if you've got complaints about us being biased, it's not in the light that you think it is. We're not being biased negatively to the Portuguese team. We're actually saying that they should be winning, but they suck. So I think there's unfortunately this duality where it's like, yeah, you can voice a lot of your opinions, but people are going to disagree with you, and they are going to try and fuck with you just to spite you, actually.
Yeah. You also have, which I feel like this is maybe only an esports thing, but the players are almost always staying in the same hotel as the talent.
It's awkward, isn't it?
Create the, like, awkward circumstances. Because, yeah. Look, a lot of the players are super chill, and you will talk to them, and you'll just be in the lift, and you'll be saying, hey, how's practice going?
Yeah.
So I am not, like, a super spicy guy on Twitter. I've had a player just say to me, like, once, like, I don't like you. I've seen one of your tweets. I don't like you. And I was like, what? Like, I'm not super spicy. Yes. And I was like, cool, okay.
Yeah. I love it.
You know, shout out to you. But it is a weird environment because you have to basically be willing to criticize people and then be like, oh, we're just like, we're at the same hotel. I'm in the lift with you. Cool. I don't know if you've seen me basically say that you played badly today, but you have to be willing to do that, which, listen, a lot of the players are super chill now. I think they're way better at it, but some of them still are, can get a little whatever. And also, like Yumi said, you definitely know which fan bases. Like, sometimes you'll be like, oh God, I hope the Brazilian team doesn't play badly. Sure. Cause if they do, I'm going to have to say they play badly. Yeah. And that there probably will be a lot of fans that aren't happy about that. You know,
your mentions will be instantly 99 red circle at the corner. Just don't even open them at that point in time. Don't, and do not ever click that button that says, like, use Grok to translate to English. There's no point. I've always said all you translating is like, fuck you or something. And it's never going to be like, awesome cast. I really enjoyed the way you broke down my Don't even hit the translate button. Just stay in the bliss of not knowing Russian or Portuguese or whatever language it is there. And by the way, that's one thing that people never give me credit for, mate. I would go on events and completely wreck some legendary player. And then, yeah, I'd have to go back. Either they'd go, oh, quick hop in this Shoal Heath, or it's just him and his whole team and me. Just like, watch my phone. Or even worse, you get back to the hotel, you jump in that elevator, but they're on the floor below, and it's just you and them and their whole team and their manager and all their girlfriend. It's like, so anyway, plans for tonight, it's just because it's not even like they're wrecking you most times, Hawkins. That's quite rare for that a player would do that. It's more just that it's really awkward for everyone, isn't it? Because everyone knows, like, well, this is weird because we're not doing our jobs, but at the same time, you basically might get me fired from my job and I could get you fired from your job. Like, who the fuck wants this, like, weird Cold War stalemate? It's just bizarre, isn't it?
There is also the flip side of it, though. I know people that have also come out with statements of, like, I don't want to predict that they're going to lose, even though they're probably going to lose, because I don't want the backlash from the community and I don't want the backlash from the fans. But at that point, it's like, you're hired to do your job. If you think they're going to lose, they're going to lose. Don't just go with who you think the fan favorites are, because at that point, you're giving up the rights to actually do what you've been hired for and where your expertise is.
I will say there are people that I'd never call them out publicly unless they, like, lied and said they don't do this. I do think, like, behind the scenes, things should stay in the locker room and in the green room and stuff. But that's actually one of my biggest pet peeves, is the people who in the green room, they're dropping the spiciest takes. And then you go on the desk, get ready for this, buckle up, he's going to give them both barrels. And then it is just like, they could have probably played better there. I really expected a little bit more on Mirage. And you're like, Where was the guy from? Get that guy back in here. Like, that guy was killing it. But I know what you mean. They just don't want to be the guy who's like, has that thread, fans of this person come here on fucking HLTV, and then it's like, fire them, unprofessional. I mean, the joke is I've always been told I'm killing esports the whole time, which makes it dark because I said I am esports once. So where does that even fucking, where's that going? I know. Yeah.
You've trapped yourself, it seems.
I have. Checkmate myself, pit myself in a corner on that one, Yumi.
I do think there are some, there are definitely players that do separate art from artist. Like, they understand the product of the broadcast.
Yeah.
And, you know, people can be critical or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I do find it hilarious when they take it personally, because, you know, I feel like some see it as like, oh, I put my life into Counter-Strike and you're criticizing my Counter-Strike, and because Counter-Strike is my life, you hate me.
Yeah, you want me to fail as a human being. Basically.
You want me to basically go out of the circuit. It's like, no, in fact, if the worst part is when you say positive things and then highlight negative things as well.
Yes.
That they're like, oh, this guy's taken a very objective stance on my person, and therefore he still hates me. Like, he must hate me because he can't have both of these things at the same time. They can't both exist. And there are some players that are very good at distinguishing between that and just going like, hey, you might criticize me as a professional, but as a person, like, you could still get on, you know? I can hate working with colleagues, but still find them enjoyable colleagues. You know, I when I used to work at a cafe, there were great people that I vibed with, but they weren't always the most efficient people to work with. And that could be the case in every single profession. I'm sure people will have examples, sure. But yeah, just in esports, it seems like there's... It's not the majority, but there's still a significant portion of players or coaches or whatever that see it as like a direct attack, because it probably does end up in these discussions.
Oh, with sure.
Boards and talent directors being like, hey, does this guy have a point actually? Should we keep this guy?
Absolutely. No, but by the way, that's a reason even why I'll tell you. It's not even that it's direct in their minds. Some of them know it's not really that you say something and everyone does what you say, but they think to themselves, if you say something, it becomes like a narrative, then the narrative goes to Reddit and goes to social media, and all of a sudden, yes, 3 months later, their boss does go, are we having a problem with our op? Because everyone said we should kick this guy. Like, they might actually think that we're like the ones like planting that seed, even though, by the way, usually we're just addressing a community narrative already or something that exists. But I know what you mean. That's why I actually have a little bit of sympathy for the player. I do get that. That's how it is. I just want to ask you a question, Veracity. In theory, when you're doing the interview, people would think by default you're way more neutral anyway. But I have heard actually that some players will get pissed at that. Like, they'll think you're like attacking them in the interview, or like you shouldn't ask them something negative themselves. Like, what, does this team beat you every time? Do people ever get bothered with you when you do the interviews?
Oh, yeah. Like, you get accused of bias all the time. Like, if you address the positives, you're biased because you're being overly positive and praising them. But then as soon as you address the negatives, it's you're being biased because you wanted the other team to win. And, like, I've also had it before. Like, if you're mates with the players and you have to do a difficult interview, they expect you to kind of take it easy on them, when it's like, we could be friends, but also I'm not going to hold back from asking the difficult questions, because that's my job. Like, you have to ask the difficult stuff because we want answers on the desk. I know everybody watching at home wants answers. And also, like, we're just trying to, you know, make it a better show. That's our job at the end of the day. But yeah, you're like, either which way you go, the fans will criticize you and accuse you of being biased. But then also the players will expect some bias if you're friends with them, or if you get along with them.
In a weird way, if you're friends, surely you should even be harsher. You know, if you're real friends, most of the time you don't take it easy on friends.
This is the thing. Like, they will be fine if I, like, you know, kind of approach them in like a, wow, you absolutely bottled that game. If I'm talking to you in the lift as your friend, it's fine. And they're totally okay with you speaking to them in that way and chatting as friends. But there's something about it being on camera that makes it not okay. And I do think it is completely the planting the seed within the community, other people talking about it, that makes it not okay in their minds.
Yes. And also, you have to remember, sometimes they genuinely feel like called out, like they're embarrassed or something, even though you're not even usually doing it. You're more just like, let's analyze this. You know, what are you thinking of that? Or was it, is changing before? Did something happen? You know, you're trying to be more analytical, if anything, but they're just getting the emotional side. Like, what the fuck? I'm getting called out. Like, fair play. And I can't lie, here's the thing. I also, you guys are doing that side. I agree, there is that side of like, oh, this bloody fan base is going to be on me. Oh, I'm going to say this. But listen, you can also reset the psychological filters and you can play with that too. Like, you think there are times I'm in a green room, like, check this out. This is going out like that. Hit send. And then just sit back, like, watch this. And then just... listen, mate, if that's a boring game, I'm definitely doing that. What are you talking about? Straight fire. Like the touch paper and sit back. Hawker, come on. Do you actually get accusations? Are you biased? Is that a certain fan base think you just hate them irrationally? Because one thing I think you do is, I actually notice you do put mad spicy opinions in your take. It's just that your persona doesn't make it come off as too extreme, you know? You just seem like you're just chatting and you're just having an angle. So I feel like you get away with it, mate. My problem is I oversell it, don't I? So it's obvious I'm being a fucking villain or something, so everyone hates my guts, but whatever.
Yeah, I think often enough times it's like probably like popular enough in the community, or like people can see where it's coming from. I mean, the way I always try and think of it is like, if I'm giving like a negative take, it's because I want the team to be good. Like, that's always where it's coming from. Okay. And so I try and make sure that like comes across is what I want. I'm like, I'm going to be harsh on you because I want you to do well. Like, especially with Donk, the whole thing with Spirit is always, I want Donk to win stuff. I think he's so good. Right. So when it's coming from there, I hope that it comes across like that. Yeah. I think I do agree with you. For some reason, I think I mostly get away with it. I mean, unless you're Kassad. I guess Kassad's the one that he, the one that...
You're his trigger. Bizarrely, you're just specifically his trigger. I don't know why that would be, you know. Who knows at this point in time.
The anti-Kassad somehow.
Exactly. And I'll tell you what's weird is that actually that is one of the weird things about the community. You can never quite tell what will trigger someone in this scenario. Like, it's why the... You know, like in my... I'll make an obvious version. When you make a joke, people will go, well, that went over the line. So you can only know that once you go over the line, unfortunately. That's actually a lot of the case. Sometimes that same joke might, in another setting, just be totally not even just a boring joke, an average one. So similarly, it's really hard to know when you make your critique, is this the one that sets off the chain reaction, or is this the one that everyone just goes, eh, yeah, they were kind of crap on Dust 2, true, on to Inferno. You never really know. That's why actually the Kassad example is a good one, because mate, there are times where he'll do like a tweet, it's like nothing happened. Sometimes it'll go like, if people don't know, I'll tie this into how players react behind the scenes. Fallen has never come hard at me on the internet, even though I've obviously like criticized him loads. I think he's overrated. I think his fans are fucking annoying, etc. But that's also because I've known him for so long, and I really have had a drink with him like 50 times or some outrageous like that. Like, he also gets that it's part of the show. He's also been a veteran. He's been around a long, long time. Like, he knows that, like, when you're on top, they're going to say you're really good. When you're not on top, they're going to say you lost the game. And also, he knows that, it comes and goes. It's like weather. But what's mad is that time at that major where he responded to Kassad or whatever, like, bro, that actually, I can tell that got on a fallen skin, mate. That's one of the only times I've ever seen him just, like, take the mask off and just unleash. Like, they can tell that whatever it was, something about the way that was phrased just triggered him. Because if you saw, he even didn't normally, Fallen's also really good at doing the sort of like clever clap back, like the mildly sarcastic one where you're potentially not bothered. Like, oh, well, I guess, like one time I said FaZe was number one instead of SK or something back in the day when they'd beaten SK, FaZe rather. And then he just put something as reply, like, well, yeah, I guess if Thorin says so, it must be right or something, which is a funny way to do it, isn't he? He's like deflected it, dismissed it a little bit. When he did it, Kassad, he just went straight at him on some like fucking pog shit. Like, yeah, what about your teams are shit though, aren't they? Oh, but they, it was almost like that, like, holy fuck, he's got him, he's reeled a big one in here. Come on, get in, get on the boat, mate, get on the boat, fucking hell, bloody hell.
And that's when Kassad realized he was great at rage bait.
And I think Hawker unironically set him on that path, because before that he would do it occasionally, but ever since Hawker and the fucking Pink Mouse incident, now it's like he's gone full like fucking Manosphere or something. Like, everything's about like, oh, bloody, well, I'd be bloody contented with that. Like, fucking hell, mate, we're just talking about skins and that. Like, what are we on about now? Like, what are we doing? We got out of bounds here.
At least they're about the game now. That's true.
Yeah, yeah. It's when it's political, I get scared. I get really nervous, you know, like, when it's like,
you say it's about the game now. There was the one that he made about Paddle. That wasn't about the game.
Oh, yeah, true. Oh, that was also some like boomer thing. Like, bloody, who the fuck's playing this sport? Like, what the fuck? Where's this coming from? Is that your diary or something? What the fuck? What the hell is this?
Let people play things, I guess, you know, like, who cares?
Oh, yeah, by the way, the other thing as well is, it's more awkward as it is when you're at the event and you do that. It's also awkward as fuck when people online who are like, you know, when pro players are friends of the players that you're criticizing and they're just like coming at you directly, but, or even worse, trying to like do that thing where it's like caught and they're trying to debate, well, what do you think you should have done on Dust 2? They're like, fucking, I'm not getting the whole thing here, mate, on Twitter. Like, you just have to accept that was my take. You have a different take. By the way, use your socials, tweet out wherever you want, correct the record, whatever you want to do, but I can't, I don't have to, I just don't have to explain everything I say. That is just reality. If you don't like it, yeah, maybe I get fired, who knows, but I do have to give my take at the end of the day, because that's another problem actually with trying to stay within the line. So you also have to give your take. You have to give it. I agree with veracity. If you actually think something, you can't pretend that you actually think that team was going to win if you thought they were going to lose. Like, you have to give the real take. And if you think someone played really badly and they let them down, sure, there's definitely different ways you could present it, but you do have to get that message across. I do think you're also hired to be authentic on some level.
It's also just, if you're really thinking about how a team should improve or how to fix things, you know, everyone's going to have a different opinion about how to do that in the first place. You know, I can look at any top 10 team right now and scapegoat a player under some justification, or say some other player will be better in that slot and make the team better. You can make arguments for basically everybody, maybe bar Vitality, but even then, I'm sure there's probably some way you can.
It's a put Donk instead of Flames. What's he doing?
Yeah, exactly,
win all the tournaments. Stop being lazy.
Let's just make a Giga Super Team. Yeah, let's upgrade that somehow. SS plus. Everyone's gonna have their own view, basically. So if you don't articulate that, even in response to someone else's, you know, counteracting point, then I don't think you really have a leg to stand on and be like, oh, well, this guy's just being lazy, or he's being, you know, he's hate filled. It's like, well, if you don't try and change a perspective, then you don't you don't build in the right direction, but Twitter is probably the worst place for that type of, you know, good discussion and discourse. It's far more reactionary, knee-jerk. This guy sucks, and this is why. So,
yeah, I guess a good question, kind of flipping it on the other side, is how do you guys handle? Do you guys try to look at the feedback you get from the community? We all know there's the talent members who I can see them. I'm like, you're scrolling far too far down that Reddit thread right now. You should not be doing that.
No way. Ain't no way I'm going to be doing that, because then I would start getting in my own head and overthinking the original points I wanted to make and like the discussion that I wanted to bring up with my analysts. And let's be honest, like 90% of the time, it's just freaks being freaks on the internet because I'm a woman on the internet. But I guess guys, it's like it's scrolling that far down. Maybe you do get some like rage bait material that you can then post on Twitter and bounce off of it that way. But count me out, bro. I want to focus on doing my job.
Sure.
I didn't think about the especially as a woman, like, I feel like pretty much all the comments are just about you being a woman, and you're like, cool, I guess my work doesn't matter, cool, you know.
Yeah, I can't even say that I've even noticed I have had a thread at all ever made about me, which is...
This guy's just made it. Like, he spent the whole episode trying to get him to hate him on this episode, so he's like, oh, I love discussions, like social media, I like to jump in there with the fans. I even saw that. Like, you had some fan the other day after our game, mate. It was... I even looked at his profile. It was just a stupid fanboy of a specific country and set of players. You were, like, talking like you were in the Oxford debate club, like, well, I disagree with your point respectfully, but I believe we can be... It's like, why are you responding to this guy? He's just an idiot, mate, like...
Yeah, yeah. I probably shouldn't give it that much time, really. But
you're too fair-minded.
I find it curious though, because like I have many colleagues that are even fresher colleagues than me, maybe more green, that have received death threats and have received hate messages and the sort. And I always just think, man, I've been working in this for like 5-6 years now, and I've not actually received any of those messages. I've had things being like, I think you were far too biased and you should change that. And I've had messages to my employer or whatever before, but I've never had them directly where they're like, you suck, I hope you die. Which is, I'm blessed for, I'm happy about, really. But I also wonder if that means I'm not leaving enough of an impression on somebody. Fucking hell. Really,
now he's worried he's not getting enough death threats.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing, though. It's like everybody gets a thread made about them, whether they're good or bad. They're either great or they suck. But I'm like, oddly, nowhere.
The idea if after this next event he works, he gets like one of those threads, like, Fumi fucking sucks. He'd be one tier and is like, finally, they see me. They see me in the community.
I think for me, I definitely started when I was starting, I would look like way too much into comments and threads, and I'd be looking for anything. I'd be like, oh, they're mentioning me. What do they have to say? And I think partly that's because it's hard to know where to get feedback from in this job. Like the person that's hiring you rarely tells you anything other than like, oh, good job, man. And you're like, okay, cool. So you kind of look for feedback. I think obviously the better way to do it is looking at other talent members and asking them. And hopefully, if you're close with them, they'll be honest with you. But I definitely think, I don't know if it's just that I just have realized how little it's relevant. I've just realized now that I can just tweet or do stuff and I just don't have to read the replies. And I think that's where I'm at, where I'm like, I just won't read this because I'm pretty confident in my take. I don't need to read this because I know it will subconsciously get in my head. So I'm like, okay, let's just like completely ignore this. And I think it's such a better position to be in. But a lot of talent members, they will be looking at the threads that's like, I mean, you'll see on Reddit, there will be occasionally threads that's like, who's the best caster? And you can find basically any opinion in those comments. Like one comment will say this person's the best. The next comment will say he's terrible. So it is basically like you can go and find any opinion about you that you want at any moment, which is a weird position to be in.
I think what is worrying and maybe why some colleagues do look at threads is that sometimes the product managers or the people in charge of hiring are looking at those threads too.
Yumi, it's our version of the player thinking that the community narrative is set against you. It is. You're thinking if they read this and they think I'm unpopular, maybe they decide between two people and they go with the guy who didn't have the hate thread. It's a real thing to think about, right?
Yeah, and I mean, it's definitely, I mean, if I imagine that that's if I'm in charge of the product and my product is being criticized for whatever reason, whether it's, tech delays or the HUD or if it's the talent, then yeah, I mean, I can understand why talent feel like they should look at those threads and see if there is anything actually tangible or if there's anything realistic about this take about why I suck. So I understand the fear. Yeah, it is a good comparison with that talking point earlier. It's the same thing with the players. So
also, as you're saying as well, Veracity, you can tell if you're in a green room, if someone's just idly, you know, looking at a scoreboard, or if they're reading one of those threads on their Twitter, you just see their face drop and they're just in it, aren't they? Like, oh, you found that thread, right? I've seen the worst one. I've seen people scrolling and doing that thing where you open up the bottom comments that are all grayed out because everyone downvoted. Like, why are you opening that? Like that thing about hitting the translate button, nothing good can come of this. There's not going to be some awesome comment grayed out at the bottom of Reddit -50. Like, that's definitely the one that's like, this person should be alive, doesn't it? It's going to be some outrageous in it.
Yeah, right, and it's disliked for a purpose, so...
Yeah. I've also seen people, like, coming straight off of broadcast, going to the green room, and, like, it's one thing to want to VOD review and see whether, I don't know, your point really, really came across or made sense, but I've seen so many people head back to the green room, open up the Twitch, and then... not actually even listening to the point that they made. They're just scrolling through the comments.
Oh, the chat, right? Because that's the chat replay,
chat
yeah.
Saying about okay. them. And okay. it's like, what are you doing? Like, just back yourself to make the points that you want to make. If you think a team's going to do shit, come out and say they're going to do shit and then back it up with the reasoning for why. Why do you care about, you know, how it's going to come across on broadcast or whether or not it's going to make you popular or unpopular? Because at that point, you're just not being yourself. And that infuriates me to no end. And it's always, you know, I've called out a couple talent members, especially the newer ones, when they come into this and they open up the Twitch chat. And I'm like, if you want feedback, get it from the people you're on the desk with. Get it from the people that are hiring you. You shouldn't be looking for validation from the people that are online that... realistically aren't behind the hiring process, aren't the ones you're having this discussion with on broadcast.
I also think people actually overvalue that feedback. Like, they think that that fan making a comment represents all the people watching the broadcast. If you've got like 100,000 people on the Twitch stream, spoiler, probably like 80,000 just think it was a good cast. They never even thought about what you did. Everything was fine. They went on. The people who complain, unfortunately, are often going to be the ones who just didn't like you or feel motivated to try and tell you off or say that you're biased and influence the cast. So it's also, I think, even though the idea is a good one of like, let's see what people are thinking, you know, see if I can get any good points. It's just, I feel like the ratio of good ones to ones that are just like have a negative effect on you is not very good. It's a pretty skewed ratio at this point in time.
Yeah. I think even if you're like a relatively like strong person, being in front of a camera and like doing what we do and being criticized by so many people, you've got loads of eyes on you. Like, there's only a certain amount
of everyone
that a human being can take before you start questioning yourself, like how you sound, how you look. Like, it does affect you. And I think for people to be like, I'm like stone cold, it won't affect me anyway. Like, they think that they're just, you know, indestructible. Yes. And that's just not how human brains were made.
I think we just end on that, actually. Normally, I just cut at the end of a topic, but I actually think you made a poignant thing there, which is that we're just human, after all. If you cut us, do we not bleed? Yes, we are paid much, much more than you every day. Some would say we are more famous, we are elevated by the masses because we are better than you, because we are, no, whatever. Anyway, the point is, it actually can be hard work and talent. That's the point, okay? That's what I hope we got across on this show. If you've heard that I'm a bad man, it's only in the Jamaican sense. Well, you know what? Here's my posse that's keeping me held down. And that's, of course, my Patreon community, the Skrilluminati. So this video and the others on my channel are brought to you in association with Matt Pugnaccio Rakula, Ben Glass, Toucan, Nikki, Jason, Jensen Gore. A special thanks goes out always to my main man, Jerky's Minion, and American Yone. Do you want to suggest a topic or a guest for my content? Would you like to take part in one of those lengthy donated discussions with me where you set the topics? Do you want teasers, find out who the upcoming interview subjects are? Maybe you want to ask me a question in my video AMA? Well, if any of the above perks tickle your fancy, put your money where your mouth is and join the Skrilluminati today, where? At the Patreon link in the description box below. Booyah!